Satsaram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We are in this beautiful stream of question and answers, of doubts and explanations, of cobwebs of confusion being cleared by the Divine Master Himself as we go through the lovely volume Sandeha Nivarini. We are now in chapter 9. We are almost midway of this book. Bhagwan has written 18 episodes of Sandeha Nivarini in the Sanatana Sarthi monthly magazine when it was in its initial years in the late 50s and early 60s. Thanks to Professor Kasturi, Bhagwan's biographer, that we have all of these translated and compiled, and that is how we have Sandeha Nivarini with us. It has been our joy, our beautiful adventure to soak ourselves with the immortal messages that Bhagwan has given us. Messages which will help us not only to just add a few smiles in our everyday life, but also ensure that everything that we do leads us to lasting happiness. By His grace, we have been going through every chapter of Sandeha Nivarini. Little by little, we broke down every chapter into little segments. And chapter 9 of Sandeha Nivarini, likewise, is split into four segments. In the last few weeks, we have been spending a lot of time in the segments 9.1, 9.2, 9.3, where Bhagwan began by saying that karma, action, is absolutely an indelible part of every being in this universe. And even though the Lord has no obligation to act, there is nothing imposing on the divine to act, still the divine acts and demonstrates to everyone the way to liberation. And Bhagwan goes on to explain how the whole creation is the feminine principle, Prakriti. There is only one Purusha. There is only one who is truly masculine, and that is the Divine. In the few weeks prior to today's session, we spent a lot of time when Bhagwan mentioned about the union of Purusha and Prakriti, how this happens because of Maya and how we get caught up in Maya. How Maya does not catch us, we catch Maya. And how we can come out of this delusion. How we can reach towards that Jiva Brahma union. Towards the end of segment 9.3, Bhagwan says that everyone must strive for this union. Swami says the Jiva cannot exist alone. It is not possible. All the sadhanas done are for this union, which is called moksha. All the sadhanas are moksha sadhana or paramartha sadhana. That is how Bhagwan says that everything that we are doing are towards this goal. And the devotee then goes on to ask, Swami, what exactly is mukti? What exactly is this moksha? And Bhagwan goes on to explain very beautifully. In fact, this is the essence of the culmination of every person in this world. This is the beautiful end that every river has to one day see, because the river is nothing but just a journey towards the ocean. So Bhagwan explains this, and he does it with lovely example. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has given us in this last segment of chapter 9 of Sandhya Nivarani, segment 9.4.
What does moksha mean exactly, Swami? And what is mukti?
Both mean the same. The end of jivi's sojourn is mukti. It means that which has the mind is jivi. When the mind, the name, the form and the attributes are destroyed, that is moksha. When this destruction leads to complete elimination of the mind, then the jivi becomes one with Brahman. That is moksha. The separate name, form, taste and limits of be it Ganga or Godavari exist till the time they reach the sea. As they reach the sea, all of these undergo change. Once these are completely altered, that is when the rivers become one with the sea. They acquire the name, form and taste of the sea. Similarly, till the time the jivis like the rivers possess their own name, form and taste, they are deluded with minus and I-ness. As they journey towards the Lord, this minus and I-ness begins to diminish. Once this becomes completely nil, they attain union with Brahman. This union is not possible till the time the separate name, form and taste exist. How can the Ganga which is merged with the ocean be sweet? If it is sweet, it means it has not yet merged with the sea. Similarly, if one has merged in Brahman, one should not have the gunas, the mind and the taste. If it is there, that is the proof that the merger is not complete. Such complete union is called Sayujya Mukti.
Oh, how grand, Swami! Bless everyone to attain that sacred union. That will make the world so peaceful.
Such a blessing is not independent. Take up the sadhana prescribed for winning that blessing, then the blessing will come on its own. That is the way. This is not something which is given away. You do not pray to the sun to make the rays fall on you, do you? The nature of the sun is to shine. If you don't obstruct the rays, remove any obstacles between you and the sun, and stand directly facing the sun, the rays will naturally fall on you. So too, keeping the obstacles of delusion, the minus, the I-ness between you and the rays of grace, what is the use of complaining that the rays do not fall on you? What can the rays do?
That is as good as saying that we must remove all traces of I-ness and my-ness from our minds.
Why do you say as good as saying? I am saying it emphatically, over and over again. If you really seek the rays of grace, make definite effort, else you will be stuck in the slush of delusion. Striving for this is inevitable for you. You have to do it, be it today, tomorrow or in the later births. Why postpone this effort and suffer until then? Therefore, attain sacredness at the earliest possible. Why should you delay becoming a sincere aspirant for liberation? From today, nay, from this very moment, begin your earnest effort. You may leave now. Remember, make this effort steadily. Do not go berserk.
So that is how Bhagwan explains to us this final journey of every person in this creation. And Bhagwan says how until we have that separate name, form, taste and limits, our journey is not complete. Only when all of these are completely altered, that is when the river becomes one with the sea. And what happens then? The river acquires the name, the form, the taste of the sea itself. And through this lovely analogy, Bhagwan tells us how every jivi, every individual is like this river. We have our own name, form. We have our likes and dislikes. And all of this is because of the feeling of I-ness and minus. This feeling of I-ness and minus, this ego operating within, has to diminish. When this happens to the last T, when this happens in its entirety, that is when we attain union with Brahman. And as Bhagwan says, how can the Ganga, which has merged with the ocean, be sweet? If it is sweet, it means it has not yet merged with the sea. Because once the Ganga has merged with the ocean, it has no identity of its own. You have no more gunas, you have no more any attributes. This is what Bhagwan says, Isayujya Mukti. You become completely one with the source. In fact, I'm reminded of a beautiful discourse that Bhagwan delivered in Vrindavan way back in 1987. It was the 6th of May that year. Bhagwan said, in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you have Lord Krishna declaring, Mamevamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. Which means, the Lord is saying, you are all an aspect of me. You are not an aspect of nature. You are not an aspect of the five elements. You are not an aspect of Prakriti. You are not an aspect of the world in which you are, which you think you are part of. The Lord is so clearly saying, Mamevamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanha. Mamevamso, you are part of me. You are an amsa of me. Since you are an aspect of me, you will not have joy and peace till you reach and merge in me. Swami says, just as a child cannot be without the mother, a river must seek the ocean. The branch of a tree cannot survive separation from the tree. A fish cannot live outside its sustaining element, water. So also man, who has come from God, cannot have real happiness until he returns to God. A devotee once sang, having forgotten you, I have come to this world. Leaving the eternal that you are, I have plunged into this transient temporary world. What joy can I reap in this clod of earth, as all joys are in you alone? All joys are in you alone. That's why Swami says we have to find our way back to God. That is our destination. We have to retrace the steps, how we have come. And that is what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. All living beings have to go back to the source from which they came into existence. To remember the source from which we came, and to make endeavor to return to that source, is the essential spiritual endeavor that every man should make, Bhagwan says. And the journey is complete when there is complete elimination of I-ness and minus. Many times people think about moksha as something that one attains after death. Swami said in a discourse on 29th March 1998, liberation can be attained here and now. What is moksha? Moha kshaya. The elimination of moha, the elimination of attachment. Why does this attachment happen? Because of the feeling of I and mine. Swami says people are too attached to their relationships, to their possessions. Yes, you have a duty to protect your family, but you must not be immersed in concerns about them, Bhagwan says. You can be in the world, but let not the world be in you. When Bhagwan talks about renouncing oneself, diminishing oneself, reducing oneself to nothing, so that you become one with the source of everything, I cannot but think about that glorious life, that life that shone with such amazing brilliance, life that fills you with inspiration every time you recall that episode or recreate that episode in your mind. Every time the story of Rama is told and this episode is narrated, your being is sublimated. It is the story of the paragon of piousness, Mother Shabari. When Mother Shabari saw the lotus petal-like eyes of Lord Rama, those long arms that reached to the knees, that beautiful blue complexion, the ringlets of hair on his forehead, Shabari could not contain her ecstasy. She rushed and fell at the feet of Rama. And when she asked Rama, "Can you please tell me, are you not that Rama? Are you not Lakshmana?" She looked at Lakshmana, and that is when Rama smiled and said, "Mother, we are coming from Ayodhya. Yes, I am called Rama and he is Lakshmana." And in joy, Shabari burst forth, "My long cherished desire has been fulfilled. I have been waiting and waiting, waiting for your arrival day and night. Every day I used to look into the horizon till my eyes become dull and insensitive, waiting. When will you come? Oh, all my fasts, my vows, my vigils have borne fruit. This is all because of my Guru's grace. This is the result of my Guru's benediction. This is the mysterious working of God." Bhagwan, while speaking to the Balvikas students and teachers in Mumbai way back in 1971, narrated the story of Shabari and said Shabari had a very tender, compassionate heart. How she came to sage Matanga and stayed at his ashram is itself an eye-opening tale. Her marriage was arranged by her parents, and because she belonged to the tribal community, Adivasis, there was a custom in that community that a goat was to be offered to the tribal goddess on the night previous to the marriage ceremony. And when Shabari came to know about this slaughter, she cried, her heart tore to think that a dying bleat of a goat will be the prologue for her wedding. She fell at the feet of her parents and said, "We cannot do this. How can my married life be happy when you're killing a being for this ceremony?" But her father pushed her aside and proceeded with that cruel rite. That was unbearable for Shabari. She stole out of that den of torture and hid herself in the depths of the jungle. She just ran away from home. When day dawned the next day, her parents, the grooms, everybody started searching for her. The whole groom's party were plunged in grief and anxiety. They combed the entire area where she was staying. They searched through the thick bushes and the jungles. They could not find her. In fact, during her search, they came to a place where Shabari was close by hiding, and Shabari overheard them. They were saying she could not have gone to a hermitage, because anyway no woman would be given asylum in a hermitage. So they did not go near the hermitage. The hermitage that was in that jungle. When Shabari heard those words, that was a very interesting clue for her, how she could protect herself. And so she stayed in and around that hermitage, and that was the hermitage of sage Matanga. She concluded, "This is the safest place for me, because no one will suspect that I am here." And she thought, maybe one day the monks here will take pity on me and take care of me and not send me back. And so she hid behind bushes and trees, and she listened to the lessons that were imparted by sage Matanga to his disciples. Bhagwan very beautifully describes in Ramakatha Rasavahini how Shabari served the gurus and those sishyas, removing the thorns from the tracks that led to the rivers when they went for their bath in the morning. And how did she do this? She would roll on the ground, and she would do it pretty early, much before dawn. And that is how she would remove the thorns from the path that the guru and the pupils were taking for their morning shower. She would remove the pebbles and the stones. Nothing should hurt the feet of the guru and his disciples. She lived on fruits and tubers, just like the guru and the pupils did. Unseen, unnoticed, unrecognized, silent, steady, relentless was her seva to the guru. And she spent her days in the recesses of the jungle. But sage Matanga, who was a Mahatma, he knew the yearnings of Shabari. He knew what was glowing in the heart of Shabari. And one fine day, sage Matanga called Shabari and made an exception and gave her shelter in his hermitage. "Don't strain yourself so much. You will be very exhausted. You have to live long. There is very important work that you need to before Sage Matanga decided to leave his body, he called Mother Shabari and said, "Shabari, the task for which I have come is over. I have resolved to leave this body now, but you will remain in this hermitage from now on. Do you know why? Soon Rama will come into this forest and you will have the opportunity to invite him to enter this hermitage. You will have the opportunity to offer service to Lord Ramachandra. This hermitage will be sanctified by the touch of his feet. Your life will be sanctified with the darshan of the holy divine form." Shabari was heartbroken when Sage Matanga decided to leave the world. Shabari had so much love, so much reverence for the master who had given her refuge. Shabari told him, "Why don't you take me too? You are going away. But Sage Matanga said, "No, you have to be here, because you are luckier than I. Your fortune is greater than anyone else. You will have the opportunity to serve, see and bask in the bliss of being with Sri Rama." And from that day, Shabari had no other thought than of Rama. No other desire than the desire to have the darshan of Rama. No other wish than the chance to touch his feet. No other aspiration than the opportunity to speak with Rama. Bhagavan says her heart was saturated with the Rama Rasa, with the Rama principle, the sweet ambrosia of the Ramanama. She knew no meditation, she knew no dhyana. She just spent her time only preparing for the visit of Rama to the hermitage. She cleaned the paths. Pebbles and thorns disappeared from the path. She walked through the undergrowth and removed overhanging creepers, because she imagined Rama would not have combed his hair and it might get caught. He is leading the life of a mendicant. She broke the lumps of earth, for she feared the tender souls of Mother Sita will be hurt when she walks over them. She gathered fruits and tubers from the jungle, and she kept them every day ready, because you never know when Rama will come. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe this afternoon itself. Maybe early morning, before the sunrise tomorrow. And she tasted every fruit. Was it sweet? Is it bitter? Is it sour? My Rama should have only the best fruit. She smoothed the surface of all the stones that lay by the side of the tracks in the jungle, because she thought when Rama, Lakshmana and Sita walk through the path, if they want to rest, we never know on which stone they might want to rest for a while. Every stone must be polished and nice. Bhagwan says, as she cleaned those stones, her heart itself became soft like the heart of Rama. Her heart became Rama Hridaya. It was no more Shabari Hriday. It was no more the heart of Shabari. Shabari's heart had transformed into the heart of Rama. Just to think about the devotion of a devotee like Shabari, to every day think, breathe, drink, sleep, eat only Rama. She did not exist as an individual with any individuality. She existed only because she has to have the darshan of Rama. Wherever she walked, whatever she ate, any flower she saw, any fruit she saw, everything was meant for Rama. And what patience! You don't know when that is going to happen. Doing it day after day with the same interest, same enthusiasm, same dedication, same love. No complaints, no frustration, no dejection, no questions. I think this is what is the life of someone who is on the path of moksha sadhana. Morning till night, if everything that we do is centered only on one thought, one goal, then our lives too would be on the path. As Bhagwan says, it would be marching towards the source. That is how we will lose our name, form, taste, everything. That is how the river can become the sea. Right from morning till night, dawn till dusk, if every thought, word, act is suffused with that feeling, at least if we have even a few moments of our day when we feel this intensely, those Shabari-like moments itself will fill us with so much joy, so much energy. We sing this bhajan, Pratha Smaranam Shri Ramam. For Shabari it was every day, Pratha Smaranam is Shri Ramam. Munijana Sevita Shri Ramam. It is this Rama that sage Matanga and all the pupils adored and worshipped. It is this divine who has come down as Rama. It is this Rama whose darshan is rare, even Matanga could not have. And it is this Rama who gives supreme bliss. Right from morning, if we have Shabari-like devotion, that is one way to eliminate the I-ness and minus.
Pratasmaranam Shri Ramam. Pratasmaranam Shri Ramam. Munijana Sevita Shri Ramam. Munijana Sevita Shri Ramam. Munijana Sevita
So when Shabari was so excited when Rama finally came, when she had the darshan of Rama, and now she pleaded with Rama, "Rama, please, you have to come to my hermitage. You have to come to the hermitage of my guru. The hermitage is just close by. Please come and sanctify it." And Rama was so happy with joy. Rama spontaneously agreed, and with spontaneous surging love erupting from his heart, Bhagwan Sri Ramachandra went to the hermitage with his brother Lakshmana, and Shabari was so overpowered by that flood of joy. She was in ecstasy. She suddenly was so filled with energy, even though she had become old by then. Years of service to the Guru and years of waiting for Rama. Suddenly she had become young in strength. Suddenly Bhagwan says she had the strength of an elephant. She marched buoyantly to the river. In quick time she got water. She arranged the fruits and she started offering those fruits to Rama and Lakshmana. Those fruits that were sweet and ripe. And when Rama ate those fruits with so much relish, Rama said, "Mother, these fruits are as sweet as your own heart. Really, these are not fruits that grow on trees. Those wild fruits that grow in the jungle, they are not this sweet. They can never be this sweet. These are fruits that have grown on the holy tree of life on the branches of the pure mind in the sunshine of love. Trees which have grown on the branches of pure mind in the sunshine of love. No wonder Rama ate those fruits, extolling how tasty they were all the time. And Lakshmana was so happy seeing Rama this interested in eating, because Rama used to eat very little, especially after Sita was lost. Rama all the time seemed to be in sorrow and he would hardly eat. Lakshmana used to all the time wonder and worry how to persuade my brother to at least eat a little. Even after a lot of pleading and praying, Rama would just eat half a fruit. And here, something had happened and Rama was just eating everything that Shabari was giving with so much joy. In fact, Shabari gave the fruits which had dropped from the trees. Shabari used to dust them, clean them, taste them and keep it. And every day she would do this. And if that day Rama has not come, oh, yet another day has gone by, my Rama has not come. She would consume them in the night as prasadam. She would think that she has already offered that to Rama. Now it's the prasadam she should take. That is the food she ate. Day after day she roamed in the forest in search of those sweet fruits, so that if today Rama comes, I must have the best ones. So any day, Shabari's fruits were saturated with that love and devotion. And for Lakshmana and for the whole world, what a lesson it was. What is it that touches the Lord? When there is no I-ness, when there is no minus, when the mind merges completely in thought of the divine, everything that we do becomes sweet. And the Lord longs to accept whatever we give. And this is the bliss that the Lord wants. So when Swami says, bliss is my food, this is the bliss that satiates the hunger of the Lord. Shabari was so moved. She told Rama, Rama, I don't know how to extol your glory. I have no words. I am not a learned person. I am not a poet. I am not a scholar. I don't know how to use words. I have not practiced any austerities. I belong to a low caste. Only thing I know is to love you. I have nothing else. I have no other support, no other sustenance. Rama was so touched. Rama lifted her chin and looked deep into her eyes and said, Mother, devotion is the only thing that I need. Everything else is unimportant. Everything else is subsidiary. All this scholarship, caste, status, they mean nothing to me. They are of no value in my eyes. More than all these powers gained by spiritual discipline, sadhanas, what I relish is the sweetness of devotion. Sweetness of devotion saturated with love. I seek only that, nothing else. And if a man has no love in him, he's as barren as a cloud with no moisture, is as barren as a tree with no fruits, is as barren as a cow not yielding milk. And he's ever far from God, never can earn the grace of the Lord. And then Bhagavan made a historic statement, and this is a statement that is a lesson for anyone on the spiritual path. Bhagwan told Shabari of the 9 ways of cultivating devotion. I only desire that at least one of them be followed consistently by man. We have Shravanam, Mananam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevanam, Vandanam, Marchanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. We have so many paths of cultivating devotion. I only wish people at least follow one path and do it consistently. But when I think about you, I have found in you someone who has followed all these paths, all the 9 ways of loving the Lord. I don't see anyone higher than you in spiritual attainment. Lord Rama says this. Bhagavan writes in Ramkatha Swami, this is what Rama says to Shabari. Because she was all the time doing Ramakirtana. She was all the time chanting the name of Ramana. She was all the time, her ears were only perked to listen anything about Rama, to hear the footsteps of Rama. She could only think how I can serve Rama's feet. This thorn should not affect Rama. This pebble should not affect Rama. That is how she served the feet of Rama. She offered those flowers, those fruit. That is how she did Archanam of Rama. Every day and night, she prostrated at that beautiful form of Rama, Vandanam. Is there anyone who can be more subservient, more humble than Shabari? As a servant of Lord, no questions. Himalayan patience, complete acceptance, unconditional love, Dasyam. And Rama, as he lifted her chin, it was like Rama had found someone so dear. It was like the relationship of a close friend. And the final merger of Shabari. How did Shabari merge at the feet of Rama? Her eyes were set on the form of Rama, at the lotus feet of Rama, as she prostrated. She developed that inner fire of yoga, and in that moment she reduced her body to ashes. Her breath was exuding the fragrance of seeing Rama, thinking about Rama. She merged into Rama consciousness at her own will, at the physical feet of Rama. Atmanivedanam. To me, the life of Shabari is a beautiful example of how humble a devotee can be. How egoless a devotee can be, how patient a devotee can be, how ultimately you don't exist at all. In fact, there is a river in Andhra Pradesh called Sabari Nadi. When Bhagwan had visited the east-west Godavari districts way back in the 60s, Bhagwan did talk about this to the devotees who were with him. And Bhagwan did recount this glorious devotee of his. Bhagwan here says that the river should merge in the ocean, and maybe to remind us that of this, we still have the river. They say that after Shabari merged at the feet of Rama, Shabari remained forever in the form of that river, and that is called Shabari Nadi. It is near Bhadrachalam in Andhra Pradesh. It was Shabari who gave the clue to Rama and Lakshmana that they have to now meet Sugriva. Once you have that kind of love, that kind of emptiness within, you just become the channel. You become an instrument of the Lord. You become that conduit through which the Lord does beautiful work. And that is how Rama meets Sugriva, and the meeting with Hanuman happens, and Hanuman goes to Lanka. Hanuman meets Sita there in the Ashoka Vana. When finally Hanuman discovers Sita, and Sita is filled with bliss that finally she was meeting someone who has come from Rama. One question that Sita asks Hanuman is, Hanuman, I'm so happy to hear everything that you are saying about Rama. But let me ask you, how were you able to enter this heavily guarded city in spite of you being a little monkey? How could you escape being caught by these demons? How could you succeed in spotting this place? And Hanuman said, Mother, what skill and strength do I have? I am just the servant of Rama. I am his slave. He makes me do everything, whatever he wants and he likes. If he does not want, I will not be able to even breathe the next moment. Without him, I cannot survive even a moment. I am just a doll in his hands. I play as he pulls the strings. I have not done anything. I have no will of my own to do anything. This is what Hanuman said. And this is another very beautiful character from the sacred Ramayana. If we want to learn how to reduce this I-ness and minus, because Swami says as we journey towards the Lord, this I-ness and minus has to diminish. Only when this completely goes, one can attain union with Brahman. And that is what is Sayujya Mukti. And when the Bhakta asks, Swami, this is so beautiful. You bless everyone that everyone attains this union. Then the world will become so peaceful. Then Swami says, my blessing is always there, but you have to do the sadhana to win that blessing. That blessing will just not come on its own. It is not something that is available readily for you to acquire. And Swami gives this beautiful example of sun rays. Swami says, see, do you pray to the sun to make the rays fall on you? Sun is always shining. All you have to do is ensure that you don't obstruct the rays. You have to remove any obstacles between you and the sun. And you stand facing the sun, then the rays will naturally fall on you. Similarly, these obstacles of I-ness and minus, that is coming in between you and the rays of grace, that is what you have to remove. If you remove these, you will automatically be basking in the grace of the Lord. In my grace, Bhagavan says. But that effort has to be done. And it's better you do it at the earliest, because this is something that you anyway have to do. If not today, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, day after. If not day after, the next year, next janma, you have to do it. There is no other way. The sooner you do it, the better it is for you. And that's when Swami says, nothing should come in the way of you seeking God. You must be prepared for any sacrifice. Swami gives the example of Prahlada in a discourse. Swami says, Prahlada faced the wrath and hatred of his father Hiranyakashipu because of his love for God. But for him, God was priority one. What did Vibhishana do? He renounced his brother. Why? Because God was priority one. What did Bharata do? When his mother stood in the way of his devotion to Rama, Bharata was willing to give up Kaikeyi. What did Meera do? If the husband comes in between you and God, know the path that you have to take. What did Bali do? Bali rejected the advice of his guru, Shukracharya, when the guru advised him to not give the gift to Vishnu. Guru was coming in between him and God. Bali rejected Guru. When it comes to God, God always gets priority. One, that mission to merge in God should always get that priority. That is the goal. That is the destiny. And as one goes through one's life, pursuing this path, one has to maintain equanimity. That's what Rama tells Shabari. You are so serene, no matter what the troubles and trials were all these years. And that is the mark of a spiritual aspirant. One has to maintain equanimity and peace. Bhagavan says, as one is leading a worldly life, you don't have to give up all your duties as a student or a husband or a householder. But what we can do is we can do everything as an offering to God. Just like for Shabari, everything he looked was connected to Rama only. Everything she did was how that would be useful for Rama, how that could take her closer to Rama, how that would ensure that it would make Rama happy. So if we have that kind of an attitude, then we are on that path. Then every ordinary act also will become sanctified. Love of God will express itself in the form of consecration of every action. And as we do this again and again, remind ourselves of this and engage in this every day, every moment, Bhagavan says that itself will carry you towards the goal in a seamless manner. That is the moksha sadhana. That is how smoothly, steadily will the river become one with the sea. Dear listeners, there are so many lives whose lives are full of lessons for us about how we should walk on this path with complete one-pointed focus. As Bhagavan says, from the 9 forms of devotion, Navabhidha Bhakti, let's take up at least one and practice that steadily and make our lives as beautiful, as glorious as this exemplary servitors of the Lord. Thank you so much. We'll continue in the next session, chapter 10 of Sandhya Nivarani. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to us. You can write to listener@radioside.org. You can also send your comments to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at his lotus feet with all humility and gratitude, I take your leave. Sai Ram.